Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 572 for comics originally released on July 25th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Teen Titans number 20. Now, this is a new creative team, new lineup for the team, a lot of new things.
Yeah, I don't know who the creative team was before, but I remember I kept seeing this ad for Teen Titans 20 at the back of all the DC comics for 1 month, and it's like a new jumping on point. So I was like, I'm down to try it out, so this might be a good place to start.
So you haven't been reading Teen Titans before?
I've never read Teen Titans at all.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
And now, that being said, I did buy a gigantic omnibus of Teen Titans by Geoff Johns. I have not even opened it.
His run was good, but the Wolfman Perez run of the 1980s, classic.
Oh, okay. So I have no frame of reference, but I wanted to check it out because I know people, it's a popular team, and I figured this would be a good place for me to jump in.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting then, since you've got no frame of reference. I am a longtime Teen Titans fan. I got on board with the new Teen Titans early on, not actually at the beginning. I chose, All-Star Squadron is the one I hopped on at the time. But before too long, within the first 2-3 years, I was getting it off the rack. But I'd even picked up some of the old Titans, Teen Titans stuff from the 60s or whatever, as back issues.
Wow. And my understanding is, was this DC's answer to kind of like the X-Men craze, or I don't know?
It was basically, we've got a bunch of teen sidekicks, let's team them up and see what happens.
Okay, and that's cool.
Originally, it was a bunch of older guys writing hip teen, jivin' slang type stuff. And it had that level of authenticity, you know?
Yeah. But this one was not like that. It didn't seem.
No, it's gotten much better over the decades in that respect.
Yeah. Now, I've read some things by Adam Glass, who's the writer here. And he's been hit or miss. Some things I've really liked, some things I are just been kind of lukewarm for me. But going into this, I've enjoyed some things in this. I really did.
I found a couple of things interesting. Brother Blood, the villain they deal with there, is a longtime new Teen Titans villain. I don't think he goes further back than that, but so early in the 80s. We've got Damian Wayne as the Robin of this Teen Titans. We've got the newer Wally West as Kid Flash. Everybody else is fairly new. Red Arrow we've seen over in the Green Arrow title. But Dajin, Roundhouse, and Crush are all new characters.
Okay, so they're completely new.
As far as I know.
Okay.
Roundhouse looks familiar-ish, but he's kind of a mashup between like Cannonball and Speedball, with a little bit of hindsight, all of which are Marvel characters, of course, thrown in for the mix.
That's kind of the vibe I got. I got that same type of vibe, and a little bit overweight.
Yeah. But he's the human wrecking ball, so a little bit of Bouncing Boy tossed in, I guess, for a DC reference. How about that?
Yeah, definitely. Now, question on Brother Blood. Has he also always been this Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom type character? Because that's the vibe I got when I first opened.
He was basically a cult leader that arguably had is long-lived, or is just a rotating series of Brother Bloods. I forget which way they've gone over which version of the character.
Okay. It was just kind of cool. It gave me flashbacks to the Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, you know, with the guy who reached in and grabbed out the hearts of people.
Mm-hmm.
So he just looked very similar, and I liked him as a bad character.
They've done some interesting stuff with him over the years. There were some pivotal New Teen Titans storylines that centered around him. He's one of the arguably lesser known big Titan villains, if you know what I mean. It's kind of a weird thing to say.
Okay.
But I mean, there's Trigon, there's a few others that are just the Lex Luthors, if you will. And he's not at that level, but he's not far from it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
There were a couple of ideas they tossed out in here that I thought were kind of cool. When we get the captions on how Robin has recruited all these people, there were a couple of lines here and there that I just loved. There was one about Kid Flash and his potential, and Damian's like, if he listens to me, I can make him the most dangerous speedster there ever was.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now.
I'm like, well, that's kind of a scary thought.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I like him the best, the young Robin. He's my favorite character just because he is no holds barred. I like that kid.
He's got an edge to him and just a bluntness and straightforwardness that's refreshing and scary.
Definitely. He could be scary, but, we read things that are so cleansed and washed that it's kind of nice seeing this character who's a little rough around the edges. He's almost like a kid Punisher.
Yeah. Actually, it's a funny way to phrase it, but I agree with that. I'd kind of like to see them on this run of Teen Titans do a riff of what they did on a previous group of Teen Titans with a Titans Tomorrow kind of thing.
Okay.
And it was basically, they come back from the future and what are they like then?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine seeing a future Justice League with this Damian Robin as Batman, this Flash having been trained by him, or that this Kid Flash trained as him as the Flash, and that sort of a thing.
That would be cool.
Because you could see, I could see a much edgier, darker, extreme Justice League, if you will.
Definitely, as he kind of molds these people into almost a no-holds-barred type character.
Well, and the other thing is when they mentioned Red Arrow and her getting recruited.
Yeah.
His rationale there is he wants her because if something happens to him, she's capable of leading the team.
Exactly. Yeah, she's got the guts to lead the team or the panache to lead them.
his mindset is what I took out of it.
Oh, definitely.
Because she's a similar, flip side of the same coin kind of deal.
Exactly. I like that about her, too. So those were my two favorite characters because they're a little bit out of the norm for teen characters.
I want to see them play up the dynamic between Damian and Red Arrow. I think that there's some coolness to be had there.
Definitely. That would be really cool.
Now, Crush, which is Lobo's daughter. No, I'm not even sure which Lobo. There's the classic one, and then there's the one they did the short-lived series on. Either one of him having a daughter is new information. Curious where they go. Might work, might not. Don't know
yet.
Yeah,
she's edgy, of course, Lobo's daughter. But the thing that I didn't like, that emo look and almost overly, angry. I was like, that's going to wear thin on me, I think, over time.
They've got to find an angle on the character that it makes her different from Lobo and heroic enough to be on the team.
That makes sense.
I don't know what that twist has got to be.
Exactly. And I'm not sure either.
I'm also not sure how long Roundhouse is going to last. He almost seems like a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, he's kind of the weakling of the group. So yeah, he just seems like he doesn't fit in with the other characters.
He reminds me a little in terms of role or whatever on the team of kind of Beast Boy or Changeling.
Yeah, possibly. And I could even see him being like a comedic, sidekick there.
Or exactly.
The comedic relief. Yeah, just coming out with the one-liners that'll make you laugh.
I thought they covered a lot of ground in this issue. I thought they set a few things up. We got a little bit of payoff / reveal / twist, whatever, at the end, which a little dark, but interesting.
Yeah, I agree. This was I'm not normally into these teen comics. A lot of people are, to each their own, but I enjoyed this one, and I was like, well, this hooked me to want to read further issues. And by the way, I'd already pre-ordered like two or three more issues after this. And it did. It kept me wanting to read more, which is a good thing. Coming in completely fresh, completely new, never read any of these characters. I saw the young Robin before in one other comic. I enjoyed it.
Good. Good. I thought they did a good job making it accessible, making it interesting, and it's, again, a different take on the Teen Titans than we've had before, which is increasingly hard to do, given the number of takes they've done. And I'm not crazy about kind of this darker, more aggressive approach to the Teen Titans, but it was a good read, and they've won me over to at least explore the concept.
Like I said, they're going to keep me here to read it. And one other thing I did like about this, I did enjoy the art that was in here. I like the bright colors, you know, the coloring, and I did like the lines. It was a little sketchier, but I liked it. But I think you wanted to talk about a little bit of the art, maybe like in some of the things you might have had issues with. Or...
No, actually, I really liked the art, but there was one thing I just want somebody else's interpretation on, lest I be reading too much into the art. Because overall, I agree with your assessment. The colors were good, the line work was solid, it told the story well, etc. If you go to the page where we get to their headquarters in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, I'm there. Mercy Hall.
Right. We've got that exterior shot on that top panel.
Yes.
You're not obviously seeing what caught my eye. If you look above the second window from the left on the first floor, what do you see?
Oh, Mayo.
I'm like, yeah, that's cool. What the hell?
I wasn't even paying attention to all the names that are on here. Yes, you are in the comic.
I don't know if that was just what, but it's like, I like it. That's cool.
Yes, somebody was giving you a shout out to review this book, and here you are reviewing it.
I guess. It may just be, I suppose it could be coincidence or whatever, but I saw that and I'm like, well that's clearly what it says.
It literally says, geez, Mayo. Like, I don't know. That's interesting. There's all kinds of weird stuff on here. Peking duck? Why is that on there?
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly they needed graffiti, but having my name on there was just kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, that's hilarious. But overall, I did like the art in here, and I liked it was kind of rougher, darker, but at the same time, I think it's the coloring to it. It made it a little bit light, which is weird.
The coloring certainly helped, and there was one or two things, and typically I'll gripe on a scene where it's like, geez, they're all in silhouette or whatever. Like the page they did here, which is a page before we get to the headquarters.
Okay.
We've got this huge explosion behind it. Having them in silhouette works, and it really shows that this is literally a dark team.
Yes, that it does.
So I think they made some good stylistic choices here.
Yeah, and I'm hoping this team stays on this book for a while, because DC has been shaking up a few things, but with them really pushing this book, I think they'll try and keep this team on here for a while.
This team creatively clearly has an idea of where they want to go with these characters, and I want them to have the time to play it out.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoy it, and like I said, Adam Glass has been hit or miss for me, and this, for me, was more of a hit.
What else has he done?
I read some of his independent stuff, and I'm drawing a blank right now, but I'm going to pull up something real quick because I know I've read some stuff, and I'm trying to think if it was Valiant stuff, but I'm not sure. Hold on.
All right. I'm still behind on my reading, of course.
Okay. And let me see. Well, while I'm looking this up, you can talk a little bit.
Well, it's one of those things that like Bernard Chang and stuff on the art, he's done some other stuff. I think also at Valiant, although I could be wrong on that. I always have a hard time placing where the creators are from.
It's not Valiant. I was like, what did I read him on? Okay, he's done stuff like The Normals. He did Rough Riders over at Aftershock. That's where I remember from, Rough Riders.
Interesting.
Aftershock. Okay. And then he did do a Deadpool team-up at Marvel. He did a little bit of those small Deadpool things. But that's where I remember from, Rough Riders. And he did a little bit of work in Suicide Squad. Actually, 20 issues, it looks like. I'm like, holy mackerel. In 2011.
Okay, all right. So I've read some of his other stuff.
Yeah, and like I said, when I was reading Rough Riders, I remember I would like it, and then there were some things I wouldn't like, and I attributed it to the writer at the time, or maybe it was a subject matter, but that one was a little more hit or miss, and I was remembering he was like not one of my favorite writers, but he could be good or miss for me, and this one I think was a hit.
Yeah, I think he took an established team, found a new way to go with it without like violating what's gone before.
Yeah, definitely.
And certainly good, accessible first issue. There was a solid amount of story to it, good payoff. And it's not like the story's about to get started. It's clearly started and moving forward.
Yeah, it has. And I'm hoping it doesn't go too dark with that, like you said, that last splash page. It could go really dark, but I enjoyed what we got here.
Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm curious what direction they're headed.
Yeah, me too. So what kind of score are you going to give this thing?
I'm going to go with a B+ on this. I enjoyed it.
All right, we are uncanny. We're in sync too much because I gave it a B+ as well.
Cool. Well, that's interesting because I was wondering, because, I mean, again, I'm not crazy about a dark take on a classic team, but they sold me on it. And you coming in cold, coming out with basically the same general impression, that's interesting.
Yeah, and that means I think they did a good job. You know, it's tough to and a lot of DC books, you know, we did all this new age of DC heroes and stuff, and they a lot of them were just misses for me. Just it didn't really engage me the way it should have. And here's something I'm picking up at issue 20 with a new creative team, but they hooked me. So, and I don't know these characters any better than I knew the other characters. So this to me was better writing.
I think also the selection of characters helped.
Yeah, probably.
Because Damian just has a spark to him. And then when you add, you know, Red Arrow and Crush and a few like that, you've got a bit more of a dynamic mix to begin with.
Yeah, that definitely helps because I really like Damian. He was fun, and I could see Red Arrow being fun too.
So I'm wondering if they're going to add other characters to the team, and I'm trying to think who would be a fun kind of combustible mix, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, without going into like a Super Sons type thing.
Superboy would not fit with this team.
No, he would not. He would be cast out.
It would be funny if Robin invites him to join, he meets the team, he's, nah, I'm good.
I'm out of here. Thanks, yeah. Guys.
Maybe next time. Be funny.
Exactly.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, definitely.
This is The Sentry number 2. I believe this is a 5-issue miniseries, but I'm not positive of that.
Yeah, I think it's either 5 or 6. I'm pretty sure it's a miniseries, but I'm not positive either. But at Marvel, they're usually miniseries, regardless.
I know it's a 5-part story.
Yes.
Because it clearly says that. It's just I'm not sure if they're thinking they're going to get another story after this.
Yeah, and that's what I wonder too. This and one thing that was interesting about this, the writer is Jeff Lemire, however you want to say it. He left Marvel and then came back for this book, which was interesting after Cebulski got hired. I thought he was done with Marvel, but he did come back to do this.
It's funny because I read the first issue right before reading the second one.
Okay.
And there were a couple of things in the first that I'm like, well, when did this happen? Like Misty Knight working for the Aberrant Crime Division or whatever. And I'm like, well, when did she start doing that? And for that matter, what is the Aberrant Crimes Division and what the hell is it a division of?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Issue 1, and I guess you could say issue 2, this arc kind of started off really weird for me and it was a continuity breaker unless I missed something.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Do you remember the whole thing where with magic and Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, in the Doctor Strange thing, there was a toll for magic and, you know, there's a price to be paid and a loss of magic. But when he came back, he was able to use magic and there's no price being paid. Well, because the Sentry was taking all the punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm a super character. And it's just like that's not mentioned anywhere. I was just like I was surprised that they didn't even allude to that. I don't know if I forgot. Maybe they addressed it that he doesn't have to do that anymore. But it was just it's a non-factor now.
They stopped using him to take the punishment when the magic died.
Okay, that's what it was.
They never showed us what they revealed in the first issue here, where he's got this countdown clock, and if he goes to this other dimension sort of a thing, pocket universe for a while, he can be supreme there without the void, his evil alter ego, running amok.
Yeah, and that's a brand new thing that Doctor Strange and Tony Stark developed for him.
At some point that we haven't seen, which is kind of funny because both have been kind of busy.
Exactly. One's in outer space and the other one was missing for a long time and now is super busy. So they developed something for the Sentry.
Yeah, apparently Tony did this while he was dead, I guess.
Well, he was dead and Doctor Strange, I guess right before he took off to outer space, boom, we developed this thing for the Sentry and nobody mentioned it.
Well, right before that, he had no magic.
I know, so I don't.
Or
know
Loki was the Sorcerer Supreme. I mean, it flies in the face of continuity in many respects.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a way to box in. Maybe he doesn't want to deal with the void, or maybe of course they're building up for the void to maybe come back.
And
full force.
I mean, to me, the void coming back may be the lesser of the threats here, but it's certainly coming.
Yes, yes.
I thought the first issue ended on a very non-revealing reveal of dun, 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 somebody's a problem. And then, you know, of course, I dive into this and learn who it is.
Yes.
There was an aspect of both that issue and certainly this one where, I mean, this is a dystopic look at a Superman-type character. The Billy character's kind of a cross between Jimmy Olsen and Superboy.
Yeah, that would be very close, yes.
But it reminded me more of a Supreme kind of a story than a Superman kind of a story.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it doesn't seem very Superman-like at all. I mean, of course, you know, Sentry has the powers of Superman. You know, him and Hyperion both have the powers of Superman. But
Same with Supreme.
Same with Supreme, yes. So, but yeah, it's not very Superman-like. It's a very dark view of Superman, if you want to go that way.
The otherworldly kind of a thing, you know, is he really powerful or not? Kind of, I mean, there's all of these things that it doesn't read like a Superman story, even though it's a Superman type character.
Exactly. So I think they're trying to differentiate the character. You know, you can't out Superman. And just like I think DC's learning, you can't out Fantastic Four, the real Fantastic Four. The original is the original and everything else is a knockoff. So maybe if they can differentiate the character enough where, yeah, he has some of the same powers, but he's a completely different guy. And here's why.
Well, and not making it about the powers or being a reporter or any of that stuff, but by this dark duality he's got.
Exactly.
I mean, it works. I mean, the story has a dark side to it, but it's an interesting story. And while I'm not crazy about the art, it fits the story.
Yes, I did not like the art that much, but it does fit with this type of story, and so it did not bother me at all. Now, I had a question for you, because I kind of went online. I had to find out a little bit of background on someone, but the other, I guess you could say, family members of Sentry,
mm-hmm.
Were you aware of them, or did you know about them? Or
they may have shown up in one of the Sentry miniseries they did at one point. But honestly, I didn't really remember them. I've got a vague recollection that they're not new here.
Yeah, I had no clue who, like, a female Sentry, a Sentress was or whatever. But the interesting thing was I just went online. I'm like, what the heck is this? And apparently, you know, way back in the 60s, that was, like, one time they showed up and then one time in the 80s. So this is, like, someone who's shown up in two books.
I don't know that this character really existed in the 60s or that they had just kind of pretended it did and
Yeah, so I don't know how much it, you know, they went into it, but I was looking online. It's like, oh, so I guess it is a previous character, but that nobody ever used or talked about. I was like, okay, one of those, it's there, but we're never touching it again.
Well, and that's part of why it reminded me of Kid Supreme and Lady Supreme, I guess it was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whoever the Superboy, Supergirl equivalents were.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's a very deep rift. I don't think anybody's going to remember that. So it's almost going to look like a creation of Jeff Lemire, but it's not.
Well, and given how this kind of flies in the face of continuity, it almost doesn't matter if they'd showed up before to a degree, because it's not like he's really playing within the confines of the current Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
Says the guy who's a couple of months behind on his reading.
You're like, it might be in complete continuity, but you don't know.
No, because I'm current-ish. I'm only an issue or two behind on, like, Tony Stark's title, and he's a bit of a jerk in this issue.
Oh, complete jerk. I was just like, he was kind of belittling and insulting in this issue. I was like, wow, that just – I know he's a rich guy and a know-it-all, but it seemed like he was really just flat-out rude in here.
Well, I mean, let's look at it from Tony's perspective. The guy he's talking to is Kryptonian class, not that that means much in the Marvel Universe, but god-awful powerful, just as a hero, and he's got an even more powerful dark side. So clearly cheesing him off is a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. He can snap you in two, sir. I mean, or without that armor.
It's not like Tony's worked with the Hulk often. Oh, wait, he has. He should know better.
It's like that's the type of character you really don't want to pick a fight with. And he's just talking to him like, you know, just very snobbishly and belittling and demeaning terms. I'm just like, ah, that's not a smart thing to do. And then the eyes start to glow.
Exactly. This time yellow, not green, but still.
Exactly. Back up.
compare and contrast this version of Tony Stark with the one we got last week in the life of Captain Marvel.
Very different, and that's where the continuity's a little bit, it doesn't seem like the same character.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, it's kind of weird because, like, we're seeing continuity, a little bit of differences and snafus on both sides. I think it's hard for these writers to, they want to make, have their own take, and they're not really communicating. The editors aren't, or talking to them. I don't know what it is.
It's hard to do when you've got as many books coming out as fast as they're coming out. I get that.
Yeah.
But you should have somebody in the editorial staff, be it the actual editor or an assistant editor or somebody, who's got enough tabs on what their particular characters are doing that I don't necessarily expect all of... Jeff Lemire may not be reading the Tony Stark stuff these days. Well, shame on him for using Tony if he's not up on it. But we've got... let's see. Who's the editor on this?
I'm not sure.
Oh, Brevoort. Brevoort's a continuity nut. He knows his trivia. So he should have been able to say, well, this isn't quite Tony, whatever. Now, clearly they didn't. Alana Smith's been around the block for a bit. And even if they personally didn't know what the status quo was for Doctor Strange or Tony Stark, they could go ask whoever is editing those books.
Exactly. And so there should have been something to catch us, just because he seemed very different than the Tony Stark that we just reviewed.
Flip side, you could argue, because I thought the other one was more in character, but you could argue that that editor should have done, or creative team should have done the same thing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Because Tony Stark does have a completely different flavor than he did when Bendis left the book.
But it comes down to, if you're doing a shared universe and trying to milk the money out of people because of it, do your due diligence, try to have it be somewhat cohesive.
I agree. Now, overall, what did you think of this the century, their take on the century, and how they're how Jeff Lemire's doing it?
I thought this whole concept of the Supreme World, or whatever they're calling it, was interesting. The diner, all that kind of stuff with the real world versions and stuff was interesting. I'm not just head over heels for the character, because I feel he's just insanely derivative. But they're telling a good story here, so I'll give them credit for that.
Yeah, I actually, coming into this, I was like, I wasn't sure on it. And the first issue, I was kind of like, okay, it's okay, it's good. And this issue made me like it a little bit more. He almost seems like out of control, like the Hulk,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of cool. You know, we're dealing with a Hulk, but now we're dealing with a Superman type Hulk. And then I like the possibility of what's going to happen with that end narrative, the end cutscene.
Yeah, the scene at the end certainly gives the story a fun area to go in, and I'm certain I'd be shocked if they didn't pursue that.
I think that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, it's got a lot of potential, and I want to see where they go with it. So I think they've got a clear beginning, middle, and end of the story they're telling. And, the art could be a little better. There's a few things here and there. But overall, I'm enjoying it. I think they're doing a good job.
Me too. I agree. So I'm in the same boat there. I mean, like we talked about, even though this art's not my favorite art, it worked with this book. And I'm liking the direction they're going with it.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to go with a solid B on this. There've been some century stuff I just really haven't cared for. Others, maybe a little more so than that. But this is probably one of the better ones they've done of late.
Yeah. With me, we're very close again. This time I liked it a little more than you. I went with a B+. And I'm definitely going to carry on throughout the miniseries or whatever they decide to do with it.
I'll be surprised if this continues beyond a miniseries, but
I agree. A character like the Sentry, he's not going to have a lot of long legs to go, even more than 12 issues, even if it's the best Sentry we've ever seen.
Exactly. There's only really so far they can kind of go on some of this.
Exactly.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes, that sounds good.
This is Dissension War Eternal number 1. I may have accidentally called it Dimension War Eternal number 1 in the next week clip last week. I don't remember.
That's okay. We forgive you.
it happens. This is one that it's by Aspen. I don't read a whole lot of stuff by Aspen.
Me neither.
And this issue, when I was thinking about it, kind of clarified for me a bit of why that is.
Oh, okay. All right.
This isn't a bad story, but I couldn't find any character I really connected with. The overall conflict seemed to be, angels versus demons.
Yes. Well,
that seems pretty, frankly, cliche. I've enjoyed stories that have had that premise before, if they develop it. neither side seemed particularly interesting to me. We spent too much time with a couple of the humans here, particularly Delphi, the prophet type,
yes.
and the Alaskan medicine man or whatever he was, storyteller and stuff. I have no idea how they really fit into the conflict.
Yeah. What was funny is I called this one out as a recommendation in the previous spotlight. And the reason why is because I read the Free Comic Book Day issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in that one, it was kind of action oriented and, it's light, of course, 15 pages of story or something, but it had enough to hook me. I was like, wow, this set looks really cool. And I expected there to be more character development in this, but it's almost like, here's a cool concept, here's a cool story, but like you said, they didn't really develop anyone enough to where I really liked anyone. And that's the part that's missing in this.
Well, yeah, because the Alaskan guy telling the story or whatever, he wasn't too bad, but I don't know how he fits into this, or presumably he does, he's there.
Exactly. It's almost like they tried to fit too much of the concept into this first issue. I mean, the basic concept is people came across the land bridge during the Ice Age, and these Inuit people up in Alaska, he's talking to these people, giving them the narrative of their story and their lives and about these demons that came, but they weren't demons. They were like shape-shifting creatures. They weren't gods. That's what it was, shape-shifting creatures. And how people that moved to the south of the country, the Native Americans, were successful and others were put into servitude. And so they had this grand tapestry of a story told. And then it just, and by the way, here we are in 2009 and jets and then just starts going 100 different ways. Here's a person who sees the future. And it left me a little bit, okay, you're going too many places and not fleshing enough of this out.
Yeah, they're coming at the story from too many angles that I can't see what it is.
Exactly. So it's almost like they put in too much. And that was a big thing that I had with, I'm trying to remember the Justice League writer, Snyder. He had like these great ideas, but he put too many of them in that first issue that I was like, okay, that's four or five big continuity shifts. That's what this is. It's four or five big chunks of narratives, but none of that's intertwined yet.
The other thing is early in the thing, there was a lot of exposition.
Oh, a lot.
I mean, the whole bit of them coming over the land bridge from Russia to North America, etc. That was over four or five pages of exposition right there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was some serious world building through straight up exposition. And then the other thing that I didn't like is when you start seeing those demons
mm-hmm.
and the black word bubbles with the purple lettering or whatever that was. It made it hard to read, and that got kind of wordy, too. A lot of that.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I get why the letterers sometimes, change up the colors or whatever on the word balloons and such. This at least wasn't too hard to read, but it wouldn't have taken much for it to become a little too hard to read.
Oh, they would have went a little darker on that purple. It would have been
unreadable.
You'd been like, what is this? But you could read it, but it just they changed it up, and then it got really dense with them talking about their whole plan, and it was just like, man, there's a lot of words in here.
Well, there was a lot of telling me things, not showing me things, and I didn't know who some of these characters were or why I should care.
Exactly. I mean, just you go from the medicine man or the guy who's telling the stories to in 2009 in the past in San Diego, and you have almost this like world changing thing, and it turns out to be a dream, and it just jumps all over the place, and you're like, and it's none of it's woven together. I'm just a little bit frustrating because the art is actually for Aspen. I thought this was really good art. I thought the Free Comic Book Day issue was really interesting, and they just came at it with here's big chunks of story, but none of it's tied together. It almost looks like three different books in one.
Yeah. I think they've got the germ of a good idea here.
Yeah.
I think the art did what it needed to do, but the story that was being told, like you said, was just kind of all over the place, and I couldn't find an inroad into it.
I understand.
I was a little frustrated.
No, I can understand that. And this is my first Aspen book. I've never read Aspen before. So I was just going into it. I'm like, hey, I'll try something different. You know, I'm the type of guy, I'll jump in there and try something new. And Free Comic Book Day, I was like, okay, pretty cool. And now reading this, I was just like, I can see why they're not a large publisher, because they seem like the writing's just, it's not enough to make you care.
Yeah, there was something lacking in the story for, I couldn't find anything to hang my hat on.
Yeah, and I've already pre-ordered the next couple issues, so I'm in for at least the first three.
Well, I'll be interested to see if it gets better or not.
Yeah, and
by proxy.
I think it's only a 5 or 6 issue series, like everything at Aspen.
Yeah, I mean, Aspen's not a bad publisher, but there's frankly not all that much over the years that I've really said, wow, I really love that.
Yeah, I wanted to try them out because I've seen Aspen stuff, and I saw them at MegaCon when I went there. I'm like, hey, I'll try it out, read the Free Comic Book thing. But I think as far as, like, you know, these smaller publishers, I think I like a Zenoscope. I think they have better stuff that I like than Aspen does so far.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, Aspen knows how to put comics together. This is a professionally done book. It didn't move me at all. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. I didn't connect with it.
That's where I am, because I see so many things that could be cool ideas that in the right writer's hand, or if it was done a little bit differently without the massive amounts of exposition and the choppiness of the story, if they just fleshed something out a little bit more, it could have been something I really got into.
There are some books that it's like, you know, they didn't execute, but if they'd done this, or they could have done this, or I might have done this, or whatever. And when I throw those out, it's an attempt to be constructive criticism, not just, oh, it sucks, or whatever. But with something like this, I didn't get engaged enough to even have any, well, they could have done this, they should have done that, or whatever sort of thoughts. It felt very flat for me, and I'm frustrated by that, because I mean, they spent time, money, and a lot of effort putting, you know, a professional-looking book together, and I just wish it had been something that was a clearer hit or miss for me versus it was just there.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm kind of hoping, because I've already bought the first three, that maybe in the second issue, maybe they'll flesh some stuff out that'll make me more interested in it. But like I said, I didn't hate the story. I wouldn't even say so much it wasn't that I didn't care. I thought there was cool ideas. It's just not put together in a way that it made it a coherent story.
I didn't even think there were particularly cool ideas. And for me, I was, again, apathetic, as I think the way I'd have to put it.
That makes sense. That makes sense to me.
I mean, I keep an eye on what Aspen's doing, but most of the stuff that I have that's in their current stable was actually done by Big Dog Press before they took that over.
Oh, really?
And since they took it over, virtually nothing's come out.
Wow.
They did Penny for Your Soul, they did Critter, they did... There was something else they did. They had some interesting stuff. And Penny...
And they just haven't done anything with it?
Maybe an issue or two has come out since it became an imprint of Aspen. I don't know what happened.
Wow. That's so weird. I always see the Michael Turner this, Michael Turner that. I guess he was like the big guy who created this whole Aspen world with these weird characters. I keep seeing their names in previews, but I never read any of this stuff. And so, but I was just went into this just to see if this could be something cool based on that Free Comic Book Day. And I was just like, it left you wanting. It makes you not want to continue.
Yeah, I read the press PDF of this, and I'm not planning on getting any more of it, or really any of it, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. So what kind of score did you give this one?
I went with a C, just a flat C. It, again, it's professionally done and constructed, so it's not like it was amateur hour or something like that. They had a story, they told a number of scenes, and it wasn't something that was so, my God, how could you... I mean, you should be embarrassed to publish it. It wasn't that way at all.
No.
It didn't move me at all.
I can understand that. With me, believe it or not, it's weird, but I went with a C as well because I went into it with a lot of hope after the Free Comic Book Day issue. I thought this was going to be really cool. The idea, it's something that I thought, you know, this storyline is something that I could really get into if it's with the right writer, but it just didn't pull me in. And I'm, you know, I may see it out till issue 5, but I'm not sure. It depends on how issue 2 looks.
If you want a good war between heaven and hell, Penny,
I do.
Penny for Your Soul is something to check out.
Penny for Your Soul. Who does that? Do you remember?
That was by Big Dog, became part of Aspen.
Okay.
So they may have the trades or whatever now.
All right, cool. I'm going to have to check that out because, you know, I like weird stuff and I like stuff like that. So that's something that's up my alley. So I wouldn't mind reading it.
It has a definite religious tint to it. The basic premise of Penny for Your Soul is there's this casino in Las Vegas that, as what people consider to be a promotional gimmick, they'll give you, you know, $10,000 for your soul. You can gamble it away. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. But it's not just a marketing gimmick. They're actually buying your soul.
Interesting. Pretty good read.
It was definitely a fun read.
I'm gonna check it out.
Had solid art. It had, you know, angels, demons, a very, you know, Christian kind of approach to it. And it did it in a way that had a religious aspect to it, but not a Bible thumper or anti-Bible thumper kind of a if you know what I mean.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because if it gets preachy, I'm not into it. And if it gets like, I hate religion, I'm not into it. You know, one way or the other, I don't care who you are. But I like things that I can read and it'd just be a fun story about good and evil, like Outcast, you know, something like that by Kirkman. You know, it's definitely not a religious book, but he's not anti-religion, maybe. I don't think he is by reading that.
If I recall correctly, this title had characters that were very pro-religion, some very anti-religion or whatever, but there was a balance to it, and it was a interesting exploration of that space.
All right.
That's what I enjoyed.
Cool. So is there anything else at Aspen that you've liked in the past, or not really? Are you pretty much not on board?
I would have to actually go through my list of what I've got and search.
So it's not something
that sticks out. If so, it's been literally like a decade or more, maybe.
Oh, okay. When I said I've been reading Zenoscope stuff, the stuff that I actually been enjoying there is stuff you wouldn't like. I like the horror stuff. So the Grim Tales of Terror, which not all of them are gruesome or anything, but I think it tickles a thing from when I was younger, because one of the comics I used to love reading, like the you know, the horror comics or the frightening comics or the strange and weird stuff.
Well, and Zenoscope's been around for quite a while, so, you know, they've got a definite audience. They're at least 10 years old.
Yeah. So I was surprised because I tried out Zenoscope the first time when you recommended or you reviewed Musketeers, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I
know I got Musketeers. Did we review that?
I think we did. I can't remember. Did we review it or did you, Drew, review it? I can't even remember. I think maybe we reviewed it. I can't remember. But I remember reading it.
I don't think we reviewed it, and I don't think Drew and I maybe we did, because I haven't read anything after that issue.
Or maybe it was Preview Spotlight you talked about it.
I know I talked about it on the Preview. I'm pretty sure I talked about it on the Preview Spotlight, but I don't know that I've read any of it yet. That's one of the many things waiting to be read.
Ah, well, that was my first taste of Zenoscope, was based on probably your Previews pick. And I picked it up, and it was okay. It wasn't bad, but at the same time, I had picked up the horror, the Grim Tales of Terror, and that kind of hooked me, because I was like, "Oh, this is, you know, something when I was a kid." Kind of nostalgic for those horror stories that aren't actually that scary, you know?
No, that's cool. The executive assistant stuff from Aspen—that's been some of the stuff I've enjoyed.
Oh, I got a primer on that, like a little, like a, you know, 25-cent primer. And I didn't. It just gives you like 5 pages of material, but that's the one. What is that about?
Basically, it's a world in which there are very good-looking executive assistants. They're female and stuff, that are also essentially assassins. And rich people have them. And if they need somebody taken out, or if they need protection, or whatever, definitely there's a bit of a sexist nature to it, of course. But it's fun. It's entertaining. And they've done a number of miniseries over the years.
Oh, so I might have to check that out, because I think they had a lot of trades for that one.
Yeah, they've done at least like 5 volumes or something.
Holy mackerel, that's a lot of stuff. And pretty good stuff?
I enjoyed it.
All right, I'll check it out.
But yeah, most of the other stuff I've gotten is more from Big Dog Inc. that's now part of Aspen, but really wasn't when I was getting a lot of the stuff.
Okay. Now, I think you also you said you're going to have your convention stuff. Is that going up tomorrow?
As we record this on July 31st, it goes up tomorrow morning, the 1st of August, and for the first part, which covers Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then what my sister and I did Saturday, Sunday goes up on Friday.
Oh, that'd be cool. So, I mean, we talked about that last time, so I don't want to rehash your stuff, but you know, I kind of previewed a little bit of it, and it looked like some good stuff.
It was an interesting convention. It was, like I said, not the highlight of conventions for me, but it wasn't the low light either. And there was definitely a lot to do. Some days were a lot busier than others.
Now, how far behind are you more current on your DC stuff or Marvel stuff?
I am more current on my DC stuff by a
Okay.
decent margin.
Okay, you haven't gotten to Justice League Dark yet, have you?
I have not.
Okay, I just read that the other day, so yeah, you're probably not that current. But actually,
Since we talked last, which was just a few days ago, I've read the three books we've talked about. I've also read Sentry number one. The only other thing I've had time to read was Doomsday Clock number six.
oh, okay. Yeah, Doomsday Clock. The thing that is frustrating me with Doomsday Clock is the infrequency of the issues.
I was going to suggest it might be the rapid release schedule they had.
I mean, this is your benefit that you're so far behind that you can't catch up on that. I mean, I read an issue and I have no clue what happened 2.5 months ago. I'm like, I can't remember what happened, and there's no recap page. So I'm like, I don't want to go digging through boxes trying to pull out the first five issues and try to remember. Oh yeah, this is what happened. I'm enjoying the art and enjoying the story for what it is, and I'll forget in 2 months what the next issue is.
Yeah, I think as a result, a lot of people may have that problem and it may fall flat just in the general audience.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, you know. Like, you figure, like, especially like a DC and a Marvel, that they have the money to front load this, you know, to pay for the story up front. Because this guy, they got to know he's a great artist. Is it Gary Frank?
Yeah.
But he's a slow artist. You know, if he's going to take a year or 2 years to do a story, start paying him out a year ahead of time to start drawing the issues, because it's just so late, it's kind of crazy.
The challenge with that is sometimes you wind up having to redraw stuff because the continuity's changed out from under you.
That's true. That's true. And would you prefer that they do it like this, or do you prefer that they alternate the artist?
I prefer neither. I like your solution of do it ahead of time, get the thing in
Me
the
too.
can and get it out.
I agree.
If you've
Well,
got a bunch of artists that are compatible enough style and just damn good, like the rotating artists on Man of Steel did not bother me at all.
yeah, it didn't. Yeah, I didn't mind it at all.
And I don't like these lengthy delays between issues. It kills story momentum. But I think the other problem with Doomsday Clock is not only that the release schedule is killing the momentum, it's a fairly slow story.
Yeah, it's not fast paced, so you pick it up and it kind of meanders and wanders for a little bit. It almost seems like a story that was like, even though there's a lot of material in there, it's very decompressed as far as the pacing goes. And so I'm like, I wonder if they could have told the story in 6 or 8 issues, you know, and just boom, smash it together. But you know, of course they want their money, I understand, but it's just frustrating when every time I read that, I'm like, I get a little frustrated.
What we may want to consider doing is if and when it finishes, doing an episode either on the 12th issue or doing a back issue spotlight covering it, since some of them will be fairly back issues.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
And just does it hold together if we read it all in one sitting or something?
Yeah, if you sat down and read that as like a trade or all 12 single issues back to back, it might be an amazing story, but at the pace now and what's happening, I literally, you know, some of those issues came out, you know, 8 months ago. I don't remember 8 months ago what happened. So it's like, I just kind of breeze through it and pick out what I can.
Well, and the problem I'm having is I'm sufficiently far behind on my reading that some of the stuff I'm reading, the last time I've read it has been 5, 6 months ago. Then I'll go plow through a staggering number of issues in a few cases, and then it may be a little bit before I get to it again because I'm catching up on all the stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, make sure you read Aquaman. Aquaman's been really good. I'm up to speed with that. And it's interesting. It's gone an interesting way with the last thing with the Mera short story, and then with Aquaman.
I've gotten a few issues into the Mera miniseries, and I'm only one issue behind on Aquaman.
Okay, that's pretty good. I enjoy that, and I've been enjoying a lot of the DC stuff. I enjoy Bendis, of course, with Superman. I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah. There are a couple of titles, like X-Men Gold, I think I am 11 issues behind on.
Holy mackerel. So you're basically reading two trades worth of material when you finally start reading it.
Just about, yeah. maybe three by the time I get to it.
Hey, you're getting to that exciting wedding issue.
Yes, Cyclops and Jean Grey, right? No.
Exactly.
It's gotten bad enough that I finally did the math this afternoon when I had a few minutes of how many days are left in the year, ballparking how many I get every week, and for now I just said, okay, let's assume 4 dozen. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. How many do I need to read based on what I've got now and what I'll get between now and the end of the year to end the year having read everything?
Yeah, for the year end, you know, nominations of the best and year-end recaps and everything. Yeah, I need to finish.
I'm getting to where in another day or two, I need to be reading about a dozen issues a day.
Holy mackerel. That's kind of stressful.
And I'm not reading 100 or a dozen a day. I mean, I'm around, let me see, how far behind am I? I'm closing in on 600.
Wow. That's just daunting.
It is. It's,
yeah, that's two long boxes.
Yeah, it's or four short boxes. I'd gotten four of those plastic bins or whatever from BCW. I've filled them.
Oh my gosh.
I gotta read.
Exactly. No more TV. It's the summertime. Read.
Yeah, well, I'm watching some TV too.
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting to see if and when I catch up.
I'll tell you what, though, you know, it's a good problem to have that you have a lot of entertainment and good reading ahead of you.
Absolutely. And it's nice having a bunch of issues because it sucks. Oh, geez, look where they left. I want to know what happens next. In most cases, I can know.
You just pick up the next one.
Just pick up the next one.
You're like, you become a trade waiter without meaning to be.
Exactly. I'm reading the story in trade even though I'm doing it in the single issues. It's funny.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's cool.
It's all good stuff, but they're coming out with a lot of stuff. The every other week schedule, it's caught up to me. It's a staggering amount.
Oh yeah. It's a lot. And like I said, I really wish you the best. I tease you a lot with that. But
no, I know.
I remember when I got backed up when I switched from monthly to weekly shipping, and then I realized I was a month behind in my reading when I first started co-hosting with you. I remember I was just stressed out. I was like, oh my gosh, I got so much to read. I was just read. It was like stress reading.
I appreciate your willingness to do like first issues and things that I don't have to go read 30 issues to catch up on. That helps.
Yeah. Hey, I'm doing my best for you.
Nah, it's you know, I love reading all this stuff. I just need to be allocating more time to it. And that's the challenge is I've got enough other stuff going on.
Exactly. I'm like that too. You get so many distractions because, you know, whether it is TV or movies or just having a social life, you know, you want to do something other than holing up in your room and reading all the time. You want to interact with humans. So I understand. And now for me, I know not for you, football season's right around the corner. So that'll take some of my time on the weekends.
Yeah, fortunately, that's not a problem for me. But I'm still a few seasons behind on a few things on the TV side, and some of that's getting chipped away at.
Yeah.
So there'll be plenty of TV and movie episodes for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, Fast and Furious.
Actually, that was one that we thought about doing the eighth movie, doing an episode on that, but we decided just to watch it instead.
Oh, that's cool.
At some point, we may do all the Fast and Furious. I think we did seven, maybe. Anyways. But there's so much content to consume, both in terms of comics, movies, TV, books. It's staggering.
Yeah, we live in good times.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. It sucked. It's geez, I got time and nothing to read. That would not be fun.
Exactly. And I always go back to the thing, man. When we were kids, you had all the time in the world, and you had nothing to do.
I know.
It's like, why couldn't I be the kid now with everything to do? Just do it, do it, do it, do it.
It's these kids who have parents that have like a collection like mine or something, and they don't take advantage of that, that I just don't understand. It's a shame.
Ah, yeah, it is. So, hey, I saw, okay, we pushed back the preview spotlight. I saw you updated the forums, and I sent in my clips, and I see a lot of people are putting their clips in online right now.
Yeah, we were going to do it on the 4th, but, you know, previews needs to come out first, so.
Oh, and this will come out before after that date passes, so I'm wasting my breath saying that.
Which, the deadline? No, this will go up before the deadline, but after
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. This episode will go up on the 6th, so the 4th will have passed, but fret not, you have not missed the deadline. We extended the deadline. And then it's the 11th, Saturday morning, that morning thereof, which is starting to look like potentially a busy week for me, because I'm not sure when the July numbers get released that I've got to crunch.
Oh, they're coming soon.
But since we pushed the preview spotlight deadline back, I also pushed back the teleconference to the 18th, again, Saturday, at 7 p.m. Central Time. And then a couple of days after that will be the Wednesday, August 22nd teleconference with the Shop Talk with Cowabunga. I finally finished listening to their marathon episode, what was it, 42 or something?
Oh, yeah.
Where they talked about moving the store, the Walmart stuff, the Batrimony getting spoiled and stuff like that. Very interesting stuff. I thought their viewpoints were a lot of fun to listen to. Definitely the Cowcast is worth checking out.
Yeah, I love that podcast.
Yeah. And then Sunday, September 2nd at the crack of dawn, or as early as I get up, that is the deadline for questions for the second question and answer episode. So far, we've only had, I think, two people post on the forum on that. So it may be a short episode.
we'll get in more. I'm going to post some stuff on the Slack channel to remind people.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's going to go up on October 12th, which is episode 1500 of the Comic Book Page podcast. Been doing this now 11, 12 years, so gotten a number of episodes out. Surely people have some questions. I just thought it'd be a fun thing to do. So
I agree.
Anything else, or that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss The Adventures of the Super Sons number 1 from DC, Captain America number 2 from Marvel, and Project Superpowers number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.